This week, everybody's twerking for the tweekend. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
to remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 63. Today is September 13th, 2013. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Leo.
Are you using a pseudonym?
No, that's my name.
Okay, all right. Leo, is that it?
That's it.
All right,
for today.
Leo the liberal.
Actually, I'm a progressive.
Oh, progressive, I see.
Oh, this is getting worse.
So, our good friend Rob is on hiatus this episode, so we have a very special guest filling in for him, and his name is Leo.
Yes, so just a little bit about me. I'm a social worker, and I work helping others, and just kind of jack of all trades.
Yeah.
I majored in English and I had a minor in women's studies.
At Harvard,
right? Of course.
Okay. All right, well, that's good having established your bona fides there as a liberal.
progressive, thank you very much.
Sorry, progressive, yes.
Oh, wait, he wouldn't have gone to Harvard then. He'd be UC San Diego.
Right, UC Berkeley, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually right.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, good job, UC Berkeley. Okay, so this week was, of course, the 12th anniversary of September 11th. And there's a lot of talk about that in the news. And it got me thinking, reminiscing, actually, about days before 9/11, and I actually went looking for the September 10th Society, an organization dedicated to remembering what life was like before 9/11, and I had every intention of joining, even if it cost me money, but I couldn't find it. There was no such organization to be found, sadly. So I'm proposing that we start it ourselves. And so I'm just going to start off by asking, what would that group do? What would it look like? What would its purpose be? I'll just throw that out there and see what you guys think.
Start, or I have a couple of things. But
sure, go ahead.
You're the guest. You go ahead.
Well, I'm just shooting from the hip here. I think in a way it would be reminiscing about the way things used to be. And looking forward to our bright future.
Yeah.
With the advent of 9/11, we've really come together as a country, and I feel that we're relying a lot more of our safety on government, and it just really gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling.
All right.
Somebody get an Oscar ready.
Jeremy's blood pressure is going through the roof.
I don't even know where to start on that pretend philosophy. Well done.
I don't think he's pretending. I think this is what he really thinks.
Do you have an issue with that, Jeremy?
I'm trying to remember when my issue started and how the bright future you talk about. I wouldn't say I'm a pessimist, I would say I'm a realist, but the path we are on does not look like it goes to a bright future. And think September 11th, in a lot of ways, put us on that path.
Okay.
I think we cannot rely on government for our security. In fact, all the things that have happened, I feel less secure now. Not because I'm afraid, not because I don't have a fear that somebody's going to come in here and commit some kind of attack or anything like that. I'm not really afraid of terrorism. I'm more afraid of what the government is now doing under the guise of protecting us from terrorism.
Yeah. Well, I'll be straight with you, Jeremy. Just hearing the words you use there frightens me. And frankly, if I think about how a terrorist would feel, I can see a lot of your projections and your sentiments than what I think a terrorist would feel. They would be afraid of the government.
Of the United States government?
Yes, that's right. Because we need to rely more on the government, and you need to.
I agree.
Government will get us out of the problem of terrorism.
Government has not gotten anyone out of any problems except, let's see, who? What foreign countries and foreigners have they gotten out of problems?
But Jeremy, we hear multiple stories every year about all the terrorists that government has stopped, and there's no telling. You know, we don't know all the behind the scenes of how they were able to go about doing these things, but they have been protecting us, and they have been keeping us safe. How many planes have been run into buildings since 9/11?
Two.
I mean, besides...
Two.
Besides
one
that,
in New York, besides, and one in Texas.
Right? Yeah, besides that, terrorist, the anti-government terrorist that... you know, obviously wanted to take out the IRS building.
Besides that, I mean, that's...
Well, that doesn't count.
That doesn't count.
Because he was, you know, he's American.
Well, that was different. That's Rob's usual hint. Well, that's different.
He was not brown-skinned.
Oh, yes. How many brown people have run into buildings? None.
Well, I think that just illustrates the point that, you know, terrorism is an equal opportunity profession.
An equal opportunity, or what is the, I can't think of it. Never mind. I'd come out the right way anyway.
So, I'm semi-serious about this organization. Like, if I was going to start this organization, do you think anybody would join?
I think people would join. I think it's an interesting concept, and it might have merit if it didn't turn into a joke or
right.
Some it wasn't not to use a. For lack of a better word, if it was not hijacked by members who had a different agenda.
No pun intended.
Yeah, wasn't corrupted or whatever you want to say.
Well, what do you see this organization doing? Are we talking about rallies or get-togethers?
Possibly.
And what do they do at these rallies or get-togethers?
I mean, I think it could possibly just be a political action committee, if nothing else, that would endorse candidates that are,
See, I'm already off them. I don't endorse candidates.
No.
I think that is a losing proposition.
Okay.
To endorse, if you want to, maybe I'm splitting hairs here, but if you want to say, well, this candidate has talked about this and we agree with that position, but to come out and say we endorse this candidate, I have never liked that.
Okay, so it could be the equivalent of the NRA, for instance, and they advocate for the repeal of laws that have been put in place since 9/11, you know, calling for the Patriot Act to be repealed, calling for, you know, what is it, the NDAA, all these other laws that have been put in place.
So bringing common sense back to, let's keep our shoes on and our belts on.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be a big step.
Get rid of the TSA.
Sign me up.
Let airlines handle their own security. I mean, it would just be an organization for people who are in favor of all those things to join and voice their support.
Okay, so you let the airlines decide how to handle their own security.
Yeah.
Well, sooner or later, you're going to have some, you know, some crazy anarchist airline that decides you can smoke a cigarette and pack a gun.
Yeah. They might even hand out frangible rounds to all the passengers when they got on board.
Okay, that's... I think I'm going to have to excuse myself. I'm going to go to the restroom here.
I think, I mean, obviously, the airlines used to have those. I won't go so far as to say they were handing out ammo to passengers when they got on board. But the restrictions on what sort of weapons you could carry on board a plane were certainly a lot more lax in the past. I mean, as recently as the 1960s, you could carry any weapon on board a plane. It wasn't until the rash of hijackings in the 70s and 80s that, you know, that all of that changed.
Well, Jerry, just made the point. They didn't have those regulations, and they needed to put those regulations in place.
Why do you think the hijackers started?
Are we going to do the root cause analysis here, or... I mean...
Let's do the stem cause analysis. Let's get down to the root.
The immediate cause was people with a political axe to grind against the United States.
It was a global intervention.
Perhaps.
After World War II.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there have certainly been plenty of I'll say, factions throughout the world that have not been happy about our support of Israel.
Sure.
That goes all the way back to the... You know, shortly after World War II, certainly the 1960s, after the Six-Day War in 1968, or was it 67, I forget that. Israel became a strong ally of the United States at that point. Go back a few more years to 1953, and the CIA's involvement in overthrowing the government in Iran. We've been involved in a lot of things that we probably shouldn't be involved in, and made a lot of enemies overseas.
And now we have, I guess we've always had countries who were, not countries even, factions who wanted us to intervene and ones that didn't. So how do you negotiate that? Like right now in Syria, some people say, yes, we want your help. Others say no, leave it alone.
Right. Yeah, and it's further complicated by some of the people who are asking for our help are affiliated with Al Qaeda.
Right. So why are we even entertaining that?
I see a lot of parallels and interesting
differences between this and Iraq before we went into Iraq. But go ahead.
Well, I think there's three primary reasons why we need to go into Syria and intervene. The first one is chemical weapons were used against civilians, and we have a responsibility as the policemen of the world to protect the world. And the second reason, of course, is Obama.
Because what he says is right.
No, just Obama.
Because Obama.
Because Obama. He's a reason in and of himself.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. You said there were three.
Because Obama.
Okay.
He counts
fair
as
enough.
Two.
He's fair enough.
This is almost too much to bear.
Syria, that's a complicated situation. I think certainly more complicated than any of the other countries that were, you know, involved, for lack of a better term, in the Arab Spring. You know, all the ones that have had fallout from the Arab Spring. Syria seems to be the one that is struggling with it the most. Egypt's probably a close second at this point, but yeah, I disagree that we are. Well, no, I won't disagree that we are the policemen of the world. I disagree that we should have that role. That shouldn't be anyone's role.
If we don't do it, who will do it, Jerry?
Nobody. And that would be just fine with me.
I didn't mean to jump the gun on topics. Were you finished with your September 10th Society? Or do you? What are yours? Do you have more thoughts on it as far as what it would do?
No. I mean, that was kind of what I was hoping to just brainstorm a little bit on. And, you know, I just think I can't be the only one who looks back on the time before 9/11. You know, wistfully, nostalgically, and says, you know, we have made a lot of mistakes as a result of 9/11, and it would be nice to undo some of those mistakes. And, you know, I know some people like Leo here would say I'm being reactionary in, you know, and wanting to go back to the way things were in the good old days, but, you know, those days weren't all that great, but they were better than what we've got now, in my opinion. So, you know.
Well, let me bring up another concern I have with the September 10th Society.
Okay.
We have September 11th now, and we celebrate that as Patriots Day.
Right.
And I believe that celebrating September 10th would draw attention away from Patriots Day. Now, I don't know if you remember the history of Patriots Day, but in the United States, we used to, quote, celebrate, unquote, Patriots Day on April 19th.
That's right.
Okay. And April 19th used to be the Patriots Day. And as we all know, April 19th, the day that the shots fired that were heard around the world, and at the battles of Lexington and Concord,
right,
was a day that civilians took weapons and they shot at government agents merely doing their job.
Right.
Okay. And so I think we have taken a huge step forward.
Right.
To remove ourselves from celebration about it.
Right.
Okay.
Because we used to celebrate the terrorists.
Exactly.
And so now
we celebrate, you know, what the good things that the government is doing for us.
Yes.
On September 11th.
I don't like the fact that they call it Patriots Day.
No, I don't either.
That's somebody's political spin.
It's like celebrating the Patriot Act, you know, because that has as much to do with patriotism as Patriot Day.
Right. We talked about, we don't celebrate Pearl Harbor Day. We have Pearl Harbor Day.
Right.
And they still commemorate what happened. They don't celebrate it.
Right.
And they don't call it, they didn't give it some name to try and wash what happened.
Right. I actually like, NPR had a story this week about a day of service, you know, they've been trying to get this tradition started. Actually, it's been going on for several years now, but they're really trying to build up a following, I guess, and make this a tradition within the country that 9/11 should be a national day of service, which I find much more appealing than calling it Patriot Day, you know. What do you think, Leo?
Well, on a serious note, I think that the whole idea of Patriot Day on September 11th, that was floated, and I don't think it took, like, progressives like myself would have hoped it would happen. And so, you know, we're going to try something a little bit more palatable now.
Okay.
And apparently it's working.
Yeah, I think it is. It's growing anyway.
Everybody good?
We're good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm busy, but I'm good.
Well, good. Busy is good, right?
It is. It's been slow all day, so I'm glad I'm busy.
Yeah.
I like the service idea.
Yeah.
I like... what else I would like.
I mean, if you're going to celebrate that day, that's about the only acceptable way, in my opinion, to celebrate a day where, you know, 3,000 people die. Yeah.
So. I think celebrate is the right word. I think
no, but calling it Patriot Day is a celebration of
it
some
is.
Kind. I mean,
it is. It's a rah-rah.
There's no need to give it a special name. You just call it 9/11. Everybody knows what that means. Then it becomes like, you know, Veterans Day.
We have too many poli-sci / marketing graduates in Washington.
Yeah, right.
That's what we have. It's ruining anything meaningful.
I guess the implication is that all the people who died that day were patriots. And
but I don't even like it.
Right. I mean,
that's, you don't know that.
Right.
And you don't know that they want to be classified that way.
Right. Exactly.
I was out having a drink last night. This is a kind of a side, getting classifying things. Sitting at the bar having a drink. It was my dad's birthday.
Happy birthday, Mr. Minter.
And it was a guy and a lady came up behind me, and I could overhear their conversation, and it was highly annoying because the guy was pandering and just... I wanted to turn around and say, you are so needy and ridiculous. Just get over yourself. But the lady reached around me to get a coaster, and she was reaching for it, and it wasn't like she was pressing up against me or anything, whatever, but... She finally got it, she goes back, and the guy says to her, oh, you just made that guy's day. And I want to turn around and say, no, you're actually ruining my day, because you're both idiots. That's how I feel about calling those people patriots.
Right.
It's assigning them, I feel like if they could tell us how they felt, some of them might feel the way I felt when he said, you just made that guy's day. No, he has no idea what,
right.
that was not making my day. So let's not call
them patriots. Yeah, because frankly, some of them were assholes who probably deserved to die.
Wow. I am not going... Okay, the 19 guys who perpetrated that, I'll say that for sure.
Well, I mean, pick 3,000 people at random off the street, and you're going to get a collection of assholes and pedophiles and, you know. So... We're calling them patriots. Whatever. Whatever that means. I don't know.
Whatever that means. But I'm not going to make... I'm also not going to make the leap to say they deserve to die. Because I don't know. That was a horrible way to die.
Nobody should
go that way. And the people... And you watch the videos. I don't know why it took so many years, but I finally saw some of the videos of the jumper and listened to some of the audio. That is a terrible decision to make.
Yeah, well, Yeah, I mean, that just kind of highlights how terrible their situation was in that moment, where that seemed like a better fate than, you know, the alternative that they had. I don't know what I would do in that situation. I don't know whether burning to death or falling to your death is better. I hope I never have to make that choice.
But as far as intervening in Syria, I see this whole thing. I've tried to draw parallels or compare it to Iraq before we went into Iraq. John Kerry did not learn from Colin Powell and what happened to Colin Powell. He's being set up. He's up there giving the same testimony.
Yeah, but he's a Democrat.
He's a Democrat, so it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, a Democrat wouldn't lie about the evidence.
Well, that's true. Rob said in that email. I wish I had printed that email. Rob said Democrats don't lie. The Republicans are liars, but Democrats just have a few bad ideas.
Right.
Well, no, there's a difference between lying and deceiving. Okay.
Because can you elaborate on that, Mr. Clinton?
If one has good intentions, okay, it's all right to deceive.
Right.
You know, the ends justify the means.
Absolutely. When your wife asks you if she, you know, if the jeans make her look fat.
Thank you, right.
It's fine to.
Right, it's the same situation. Exactly the same situation.
Okay,
but let me ask you this, Jeremy.
Yes.
Okay, you believe that we shouldn't be intervening in Syria. If you were a Syrian and your family was attacked by chemical weapons, or your family was under threat of being attacked by chemical weapons, would you not want the great savior of the world to come and deliver you?
I'm not sure.
Obama riding on his white horse.
Because here's what I would.
Unicorn.
Quadricorn. Maybe I would want some help if I was living under an oppressive regime that did that. Or maybe I would want some help. I don't know.
Well, I mean, we asked the French for help, right?
Right, we did. And look at us now. We're destroying the world. So good job, France. Way to go. Look what you did. No, I mean, that is a valid point that sometimes it is needed and some good can come out of it. But I don't know that we have the evidence to say that this regime did that.
Right.
And if that's the qualifier...
Have you not seen the babies or heard about them?
I've seen a lot of babies.
It's all over YouTube, man.
I've also heard the German intelligence that...
Okay, well, you just need to concentrate on the fact that babies were killed.
Okay. But you're pro-choice.
It's,
So how...
Yes, my choice. I'm pro-my choice.
Okay. Well, that is valid in some ways.
I believe that the whole chemical weapon thing was a CIA exercise.
Wow. Whoa. Let me get out my tinfoil hat. Hang on, Jared. You know, I would like to say that when I started on this podcast, I was the tinfoil hat guy. They accused me of bringing up conspiracy theories. Now it is quickly and without prejudice... switched to Jerry.
So there's conspiracy, false flag.
I have to stop watching documentaries on Netflix. That's all there is to it.
Well, tell us why. This is interesting, though.
I don't have any evidence. I'm thinking about the CIA and all of the things that they have been involved in the past. And, I mean, I think it would be foolish to think that we don't have CIA on the ground in Syria. They have to be there. They've always been there. And, you know, this would be exactly the kind of thing they need to kind of touch off the firestorm that they needed to, you know.
Okay, but so what? So what? Okay, we don't know everything that's going on. And at some point, you just have to trust the government that they have our best interests at heart. Do you think they would want to do us harm?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, well, you guys are both nuts then.
Yeah. All right, on that happy note, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to cover some listener feedback and probably a few stories out of the reading room. So stay with us. We are back, and we're gonna continue a little discussion here we were having during the break about whether world leaders, like, are there classes of world leaders where some of them are maniacal and some of them are not. And Jeremy was just making the point that, well, go ahead.
I believe we were talking about some are crazy. I don't know that I can classify any world leader. I can't think of one that I would just say is just plain crazy, but there are some that I classify as maniacal, and that's the same thing. I don't think it is. I see North Korean leaders as maniacal. I see Saddam Hussein. I would classify him as maniacal.
So the question comes up then, what does that mean?
What does that mean? And Jerry's contention and Leo were saying that our leaders are also maniacal, but they don't do it in the same way because we don't have the same structures in place, and the allowing there to be an opposition serves a purpose for our maniacal leaders.
Well, my point was more that they're all maniacal. I mean, they're all sociopaths to some degree. It's just some of them are better at hiding it than others. Some of them have the luxury of a government that has already established itself as legitimate in some way. And so, you know, they can hide behind the legitimacy of their office, but they can get away with all the same stuff if they really want to. It's, you know, it's either going to be covered up or it's going to be legitimate. It's going to be done under color of law.
So you've probably read it's like the trail of death that followed the Clintons.
Yeah, right.
And maybe there is something to that. But I see a difference in the behavior. I don't classify them in the same maniacal way. Yes, I believe they are sociopaths. I think you have to have some kind of mania to want to achieve that office. Even to the state and the local level. There's a lady in my subdivision who ran for state office. And all the flyers I received, all the, I have to wonder, what is she trying to achieve here? I mean, these campaigns were ugly. One was saying her husband was lying and all. I mean, just, you wouldn't believe, just on the local level, how bad this got. And the positions don't pay much of anything, but it has to be the ego, the power, and the influence that you get. It's the only thing it can be. So yeah, there was a certain mania there.
Right. I mean, people aren't expending that much time and energy to get into those positions out of the goodness of their heart. There's got to be some other benefit, some other reward that they're getting. You know, whether it's just, you know,
free
having
coffee at Starbucks.
Well, yeah, it could be having their ego stroked, having, you know, having the power. And, you know, obviously the higher the position, the more power there is, the more satisfying that is, and the more of a sociopath is going to, you know, move heaven and earth to get that position.
Okay.
Okay. You're convinced?
Well, no, I'm still... No, maybe we're arguing the same thing here.
I think we are. But you're not willing to compare George W. Bush or Barack Obama to Kim Jong-un.
Well, maybe Barack Obama. No, I'm not.
Blasphemy.
I think there is a difference there. And maybe it is only because of the structure of each individual country, of each...
Could be
the government and the culture and the society of each individual country. Maybe it's nothing more than that. But why could Kim Jong-un not come out and decide, I'm not going to be maniacal, I'm not going to order the death or the... or sending anyone to a workhouse anymore. This is the new and improved North Korea. No more nuclear weapons.
Right.
We're all free now. Why couldn't he do this? If he were not maniacal, I think he could do that.
I mean, I think, you know, you mentioned that there's cultural differences. I think part of the Korean culture, because they have had the, quote, dear leader for so long now, and it's going on, what, 50 years, That is just part of the culture in North Korea. So
South Korea right there.
For him to come out and make some sort of wholesale change like that, this is the kinder, more gentle North Korea. I'm not going to, you know, kill my political enemies anymore. He would be undermining everything that his father and his father's father achieved in their, you know, in their long time in power. He would be throwing all of that away. And I think, you know, he'd be made to pay for that by the people who are still loyal to the way things went. I mean...
Yeah, he may be the, quote, head of the country, but he ain't the only guy.
Right.
I agree with that, and I agree that if someone saw him this week, there would be a coup. But, and that, I think what I was presenting there is an extreme case. No, you're not just going to come out on Monday and say,
yeah, okay,
all right, release all the work prisoners.
So why doesn't he do that? That's a good question. Why doesn't he at least take baby steps in a more moral direction from where he is now? Yeah, he's maniacal. And I would make the same argument about any American president since George Washington.
I would say after Washington. I don't think Washington.
Yeah, I wasn't including Washington.
I think Washington is a great guy now. A friend of mine...
New George Washington.
From my former employee, Nathan, he would bring up the whole Shays Rebellion, putting down the Shays Rebellion, putting down the Whiskey Rebellion. But, you know, he's a crazy anarchist.
Yeah. Well, I listen to that guy.
fine. Washington was maniacal too. They were all maniacal. Everyone is maniacal in some way.
Yeah. So that's interesting. I never thought we'd be comparing George Washington and Kim Jong Un, but Washington could have been king, right?
Yes,
he could have been Kim Jong Un. And he served his terms, and then he went home to become a farmer again.
Yes.
And he was honest about cutting down that apple tree.
Yeah.
I think it was a cherry tree, wasn't it?
Yeah, story's made up. It doesn't really matter what fruit it was.
Why are you trying to correct me on the details? Does it really matter?
It's important, all right? Okay. You are undermining everything that has happened before by changing the story.
You and your facts. I mean, come on. Stop it.
I know liberals don't enjoy facts. I know they don't like data.
Thank you.
Progressives.
Okay.
Very difficult.
So we've kind of been dancing around this issue the whole show here about Syria, but our listener Eric asked, should the manner of death for civilians in some place like Syria guide U.S. policy? Is Obama's, quote, red line that Assad may or may not have crossed meaningful?
Yeah, so this came up, I think it was on NPR, they're interviewing some guy over there, and he said, why does it matter? Chemical weapons, conventional weapons, they're still dead. So what's the significance?
Well, I think that's a fair question. I mean, I think if any time a government starts killing its own people, it has given up any claim it has to legitimacy. And whether that killing is done with, you know, bullets in the head or chemical weapon. Yeah, right.
Do you exclude the death penalty or include the death penalty in the penal system?
Well, we've talked about that on the show before. I'm not in favor of the death penalty. I don't think we should have it.
Do you think it undermines the credibility of the government?
Well, I think it's torture. I think it's cruel and unusual punishment for, you know, whatever the crime happens to be.
So, you want to make it more usual? Would it be less offensive to you?
It is more common. Yeah, probably. So, I mean, I think that's a good point. The people are still dead. Does it really matter how they died? Well, if you believe that the rules of war are legitimate, then yes, it matters. Because those rules say you can use conventional weapons, but you can't use chemical weapons. So, if you believe there is such thing as a war crime, then yes, it matters.
So not to go down a rabbit trail, but...
go ahead.
Hiroshima, Nagasaki.
Yes. Right. Are those conventional weapons? No. Not at all.
So were those...
Exactly.
So were those war crimes?
Well, they started it.
I've heard people... how you doing? I've heard people claim that, you know, Truman's a war criminal. It's not, it's nothing new, I don't think. So, yeah, I mean,
but we won, so he's not going to be tried. It's not work.
Right. History is written by the winners.
Yep.
Yeah, so, sorry, Bashar al-Assad, you're going to be a war criminal. That's just the way it goes.
Maybe, but he might not lose.
Oh,
you have Russia
lose.
Backing him.
Yeah,
give him up here.
Yeah? Russia and Iran.
I wonder how more I feel like I don't want to get up out of the chair and do the things that I need to do.
What we talked about before the show, we talked about the red line. Let's revive that discussion.
Okay.
Sure, so there was some quote
by some guy
by a good old guy in the White House, and he talked about
our dear leader.
Our dear leader. And he used that term. So that would be crossing a red line if Syria had used, or if anybody used it. I don't remember the exact. So what does red line mean? Was it, has that term been used before? Does it have a specific meaning?
I think it has been used. Jerry said no, but I think, when you talk about a line, whether it's red or in the sand, wherever there is a line, and you make reference to the consequences if that line is crossed, everybody knows what that means.
I think it was a basketball reference, actually.
But,
you know,
but that's the point, though. He didn't specify any consequences if that line was crossed. So my boy's off the hook.
I think he did specify that there would be. He didn't say what the consequences would be, but he referenced a response. There would be a response to him crossing this line.
Yes, and he's responded, and he might respond some more if it's appropriate.
But he said he did not. He did not specify that was a red line. He just recently said that. And he tried to back away from even his quote. So how do you explain
that? Well, I think you're making my point. You obviously just misunderstood him.
I've misunderstood him since 2009, or whenever. I don't know, it feels like it's been longer than that, but I guess it was.
Well, he started campaigning in 07, so.
Oh, yeah, so.
Been misunderstanding him for 6 years.
6 years.
Wonderful 6 years.
So, I'd like to respond to Eric's question, though. Should the manner of death for civilians guide U.S. policy? Like, should the U.S. be the policeman for the world? Should we be stepping in and intervening in other countries when this sort of thing is going on? And if not, then how do you justify our involvement in all the other places that we have stepped into? I mean,
Libya
most recently.
No, I don't think we should.
But I mean, the list is long, right? I mean, it goes all the way back to Korea, Vietnam, and.
I think those were, maybe we shouldn't have been back then, it's hard to say because I lived through those. It's a different world now. I don't think we should be the policemen. I think we should be the last to join. If a lot of countries get together and then they say, hey, we really need help here, then, okay, well, what do you want us to do? Well, maybe. But for us to always be rushing in there, it's not working for us. And that's the most important thing, us.
I agree with you. We should not be rushing in. We should not be going in any way.
I think you're separating the country and the situation from the context. Okay? When we have leaders and decision makers who have the experience, who have the credentials, who have the Nobel Peace Prize.
What did you say that Barack Obama has?
You're right.
Well, okay. You're, I mean,
no, he's right.
He is right.
Obama got the Peace Prize on credit. He has to pay that off somehow. So
that's right. Eventually, there will be peace after the war that we got to.
Right.
Just like there's peace in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Exactly.
Well, you know, obviously we didn't make good decisions there.
This time it's different.
But if you look at the intention of the person behind who made those decisions, we can now see why.
Yes.
Okay, we're still not, we're not in Libya anymore.
Oh, I disagree. We haven't talked about that. I mean, it's a one-year anniversary of the Benghazi attack.
Right. And there was another bombing in Benghazi.
Another bombing, and it got zero press.
Yeah. Wow.
Almost zero press.
Yeah. Obviously got some, or we wouldn't have heard about it.
Slightly less than the initial attack.
Yeah, so it's been a year since Benghazi. There was some picture going around. It was a picture of Miley Cyrus at the VMAs, and you know, it said something like, "Keep watching Miley Cyrus, and you know, ignore the IRS scandal, the Benghazi scandal, the Syria scandal."
That's what I see this as, like the movie Wag the Dog.
Yeah,
we need a war. We have too much going on at home. We have all these scandals that Rob says aren't scandals. Obamacare is being delayed because the infrastructure is not ready. The government is not meeting their own deadlines that they set.
That's because of the evil capitalists are getting in there and fighting.
We need a war to distract, and nobody pays attention to Iraq and Afghanistan anymore. Those wars have been going on for too long. They don't make the news anymore. They don't grab the headlines.
We need some new real estate.
And by the way, John Kerry saying, nothing to worry about, Saudis have offered to pay for all of this, is, I cannot believe he wasn't taken to task. For him to say that is incredibly insensitive, doesn't capture it. Who cares? Yes, we can't afford it right now, so great, they're going to pay for it, but it's our guys and our women who are going to get shot at.
Right.
The Saudis have F-15s, they have plenty of weapons. Let them take care of it.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, they certainly have a better case to make as far as, you know, the impact that regional conflict is going to have on them versus us.
Okay, but what are you complaining about? I mean, with the gazillion dollars a year that we give to the Saudis in military aid, we're going to pay for it either way.
True.
Okay.
It's just a matter of who's pushing the button.
So let them push the button. Let them take the heat. Let them put their people in harm's way. Enough.
You really think they're really going to be the ones pushing the button?
No.
I mean, even if they're pushing the button, they're just pushing the button because we told them to push the button.
Is this the right button? It is? Okay, well, should I keep doing this? Yeah, okay. You tell me when to stop doing this.
Yeah, that about sums it up. All right, so we got quite a few stories in the reading room this time. I have a couple that I want to highlight here. Jeremy, do you have any?
I do.
All right, go for it.
This is near the bottom. Should be number one, but you know, these are in chronological order, so it's global cooling now becoming the accepted trend. This was an article in the Telegraph, UK Telegraph. The Arctic has 60% more ice right now than it did last year.
Yes.
If you read the old UN climate report, 2013 was going to be the year when the Arctic had zero ice.
Right.
The summer of 2013.
Are you a climate change denier?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I know I don't need to listen to you anymore.
That term is total bullshit.
We
normally don't.
No, it's fine.
But, boy, I really hate that term.
Yeah.
Climate change denier. It's like a Holocaust denier.
That's exactly what it is.
Denied.
How can you deny something that is obviously so true?
I'm pretty sure it's the same thing.
people are treating it the same way, and that is criminal to me.
Now, notice I said climate change.
Yes, I did notice you said that.
Then, and just for the record, we've always said climate change.
No,
we've never said global warming. We've never said global cooling. We've always said climate change. And if you've heard otherwise, then you could. Again,
you just misunderstood.
Here again, misunderstood.
You misunderestimated.
But they're caveating this by saying, well, clearly, we don't understand why this is happening, but we're pretty sure it's going to start warming again.
Yeah. Well, how and why?
So, I'm going to put my listener Eric hat on now and offer a small rebuttal.
Go ahead.
Because, and I think he actually talked about this the last time he was on the show, is that talking about surface area of Arctic ice, polar ice, is not meaningful. You have to talk about the volume of the ice. So the fact that 60% more ocean is covered by ice now than it was last year at this time may not mean anything if that ice is only 1 foot thick, as opposed to, you know, half a mile thick like it used to be. So, you know, and I read this story when you put the link out there, and I didn't see anywhere in there where they talked about how thick the ice is.
It's true.
So
I didn't see that either.
So, I mean, you know.
So is having 60% more surface area covered in ice versus not having it at all, is that...
I'll give you that. That's a valid point. The people who predicted there would be no ice at all, obviously this is egg in their face. So whatever models they were using to predict are false. I'll give you that.
Okay.
But I won't go so far as to say this has reversed the trend. Okay? If the trend is to reduce the amount of ice at the caps, there very well may still be less ice at the North Pole. It's just spread out thinner now than it was in years previous. You're welcome, Eric.
I understand your contention, but I don't know that the data...
Well, I don't know what the data is. I know this story did not...
Does the data really matter?
No, not to climatologists.
How does it make you feel, Leo?
Because they're denying... They are denying...
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you.
How does it make you feel?
I just... confused and... You're distraught.
And you're sad for the polar bears, right?
Yes.
Me too.
Polar bears are people too.
If our listeners could see me, there's a single tear running down my cheek right now, like the old Indian from the 70s commercials.
Native American, please. Native American.
Thank you. Native American. Although back then he was still an Indian.
Look, they're even... This... What was interesting about this article...
How y'all doing?
Wonderful.
Would you like to answer a couple of questions for us?
I don't know if you like my answer.
Oh, we'd love to hear it.
Tough crowd.
Yeah. So, you were saying?
I was saying that even within this article, there was like the normal climate change people who are cheering it on, saying, yeah, there's climate change. They're even backpedaling a little bit, saying, well, yeah, we are seeing trends that we don't understand, and it does look like cooling is happening. We need to look at this some more.
Okay.
This article was the first time I've really read any kind of attitude change.
All right.
And the accepted, what they called the consensus.
Right.
You're saying you believe the consensus now has an attitude change?
I believe there is an attitude change towards the consensus.
Okay.
It's very slight. It's not like, well, we no longer have consensus. It's like, we need to look and see if we still have consensus. Kind of.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Oh, and a bunch of eagles are getting killed by windmills.
Any other any other stories in there?
Oh, there was another warming story. But, you go in here.
All right. So while you're looking, I'll just say there was a there was an essay in Slate magazine. The title is "Only Bad People Send Their Kids to Private School," I forget the author's name. I had it written down in my notes, but I don't have it.
Yeah, obviously they're quite mistaken, because also homeschooling should be included in there, because they're bad. They've got to be at least as bad.
So and that was certainly the author's point. She makes that point in the article that anybody who is not using the public schools is contributing to their downfall. So,
that's true in a very true sense of the word, because as the way I understand it, the more students that you have that are not in the school, the less money the school gets through certain funds, tax funds.
Really?
I think that's true.
I was thinking they get the same amount of money regardless of the number of students that show up every day, so it's actually better for them if they have fewer students, because they can spend more money on the ones that are still there. But
that's because that's certainly what they spend the money on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Anyway, so this story was just so incendiary. It has blown up among the homeschool community. Everybody is buzzing about this story. But, I mean, it extends far beyond that, because she basically calls anybody that's ever sent their kids to private school because their public school is not doing so well. She's taking them to task, too, because she's saying, look, you can't give up. We all have to put our kids in public school in order for it to work.
No.
And you know,
this just... this lady?
I don't remember her name.
She's a loon.
She's a contributing author at Slate magazine. There's a link in the show notes. She basically makes the case that the public schools aren't so great right now, but we just have to wait a generation or two for them to improve. So keep your kids in the public schools until they get better, because otherwise they'll never get better. You know, you're never going to get there if you pull your kids out now. So you have to stay in. And, you know, and then she goes on to say, look, I didn't get such a great education in public school.
Really?
But I did okay. Look at me. I'm, you know, I'm a well-known author. I'm, you know, I'm doing all right. And your kids will do all right, too. I mean, it is preposterous.
Well, I haven't read this article, but that's not going to stop me from giving my opinion on the subject.
Good.
My very learned opinion. And it sounds like this author comes from a realist perspective, Jerry.
Yeah.
A realist.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is something that perhaps you can learn from. Jerry, the reality is that public schools are how you like to mislabel them, the government youth propaganda camps, anarchists.
I think I've used that term before, yes.
The reality is, they're going to be here. Okay? And there's nothing we can do about that. So what is the realistic, what's the right thing to do?
Yeah.
Fight against it? Or just bend over and, I mean, excuse me, just accept it and try to help.
You're right. You're right. It's a lot like healthcare.
There we go. Which was a good segue.
Same argument. Right?
There we go.
Same
right.
argument. Oh, because if we don't all participate, it doesn't work.
This administration, this whole healthcare thing.
Which story are we talking about now?
This is really related to the school lunches. Down near the bottom of page one, the administration that is forcing health care on us can't make a decent lunch.
Okay.
Michelle Obama's great school lunch program has been canned by the schools because the kids are starving. They can't concentrate in class,
right?
They hate these lunches. Her children aren't eating these, by the way.
Right.
So we're getting rid of it. Now her big push is drink more water. There, oh, you're knocking it out of the park now.
Drink more water. So it's kind of like when Reagan changed the school lunch program and counted ketchup and salt as vegetables.
Yeah.
We're going to include water in that. Okay, so I read this story, and you know, one of the things that jumped out at me was that the schools cannot afford to provide the number of calories in the meals they are by law required to provide to the kids. There's a minimum number of calories they have to provide. They can't get that many calories by giving the kids the healthy food they're supposed to be serving them, like vegetables.
Yeah.
But, I mean, frankly, there just aren't that many calories in vegetables. Right. You got to eat a lot of them.
Yeah.
And they can't afford to buy that many vegetables without giving them, you know, some high fructose corn syrup and, you know.
Corn's a vegetable.
Maybe they need some... a big vat of chocolate syrup to pour over everything.
Pour over the broccoli and, broccoli and Brussels sprouts. Yes, that'll
do
it.
It's just another, we're going to fix this problem. No, you're not, because you aren't thinking about what it really, what the consequences are.
That's not the problem. The problem is we don't have enough money. Because we have stingy people like you that doesn't want to give your fair share. Then we can afford...
Stop misusing my fair share, and I will be more willing to give my fair share.
Let me go on record as saying I'm not giving my fair share, regardless of how you spend it, so...
Well, that's true, because it's not really yours anyways.
Oh, you're right, you're right. I overlooked that little detail.
What else? I have...
Okay, I got one more. This one I found very interesting. I'd encourage our readers to check this out. The title is How a Miami School Crime Cover-Up Policy Led to Trayvon Martin's Death. Now, this is interesting.
So he should have been in jail?
Because he was not native to Sanford, Florida, where he was shot. He was there staying with his father's girlfriend, okay? And the reason he was there was because he had been suspended from his normal school, which is in Miami-Dade County, okay? The, I guess, school superintendent... No, no, no. The chief of the Miami School District Police Department, because the Miami School District has its own police department, believe it or not.
That is...
The chief... Of this police department, who was hired about a year before Trayvon Martin was killed, he was brought in to reduce the amount of crime in the school district. And so he did this by just stopping reporting all of the crime.
Done and done.
Done and done. He has since been fired.
As a
result of this.
That's stupid.
But
so
in the meantime,
the guy who's getting results.
In the meantime,
they
yes,
fired him.
Yes. In the meantime, he neglected to report the fact that Trayvon Martin was found at school in the possession of stolen property.
That's impossible because he was a good kid.
Stolen jewelry.
No.
That was found in his backpack at school.
That was given to him by somebody else.
And that was never reported to police, so he was never, you know, prosecuted for that.
He was trying to find the rifle.
Had he been prosecuted for that, it is perhaps possible he never would have been transferred to Sanford, Florida, and never would have been killed by George Zimmerman.
Hmm. Yeah, obviously it was George
fascinating
Zimmerman
story.
That on him.
That's impossible because the media said he was a good kid.
You're right.
He was not.
You're right. I stand corrected.
Any laws ever.
So speaking of George Zimmerman, if I may.
Sure.
Okay, so...
he's crazy. Right?
There was a... a commenter, a listener of your show, many, many, many episodes ago when The he went by the name of Nathan, I believe. And
that guy was brilliant.
Yeah,
we like Nathan.
When the whole Zimmerman thing first broke.
Right.
And I don't remember the exact words that were said, but I believe the consensus was you guys gave Zimmerman a hard time before we even knew anything. And I'm just curious if you have... What is your opinion on Zimmerman now?
How...
Has it changed at all? Or?
Well, you know, I'll say the same thing now that I said when the story first broke, because we kept getting these details, you know, were being leaked out a little bit at a time, and it seemed like every week my stance on the story flip-flopped 180 degrees based on, you know, the latest revelation. And even after he was acquitted... You know, like, the very next thing you hear in the news is a story about him rescuing some folks in an SUV that had overturned on the side of the road, right? Yeah, and right. You're thinking, oh, man, okay, see, there you go. He's actually a very nice guy, and he was just misunderstood, right? And so,
until this week,
well, until then, you know, he was pulled over for speeding or whatever.
Oh, right.
That story broke a couple of weeks back. But then, yeah, this week, then it's the 911 call from his estranged wife, because they are now getting divorced. And she claims on the 911 call that he's armed and that he's threatening to shoot somebody.
She should have known all that. I mean, did she not hear about the trial?
And so now she was apparently... That's right. He should have known. The guy's a hothead, and he's armed. What's wrong with you?
He's got Skittles on him.
So the best part of this story is that when he shows up, she thinks it'd be a good idea to videotape the whole encounter. So she's got her iPad, and she's videotaping. Well, at some point, he does or says something to piss her off, and so she hits him over the head with the iPad, and he grabs it out of her hand and starts beating her with it. And destroys the thing, right? And so the police have now confiscated the iPad as evidence, and they're trying to recover the video off of the broken iPad to determine whether or not, you know, he was truly at fault.
And a great time was had by all.
And it's going to take months for that video to be recovered. So please, our listeners, stay tuned. We will continue to cover this story.
But even the wife has backtracked from some of her allegations.
Right, and I mean, she is not exactly a paragon of virtue herself. She perjured herself in court, and she's due to start a 1-year sentence, I think, for perjury.
Actually, in the slammer sentence?
I don't know if she's actually going to jail, or if it's going to be like house arrest or community service, or what it is exactly, I forget. But yeah, she was sentenced to a year of whatever it is.
To me... To answer your question, Leo, George Zimmerman, I've always thought he was kind of an idiot, because I think the whole thing could have been avoided. He could have followed Trayvon Martin without intervening, just to make sure that he wasn't there to perpetrate any kind of crime. He could have done that.
I agree with that.
So, stupid for what he did. I see him as kind of like a Rodney King. He got lucky, and he was acquitted. So go away, live a quiet life somewhere. But
right.
No, now there's this and this and this.
He can't go away.
First he's Superman, saving people on the side of the road. And then
I thought where you were going with that, Jerry, was that like the media was parsing out these stories for the purpose of leading you on and trying to draw you in with your emotions of good, bad.
Well, I think they were trying to draw
on the
bad side.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall there was an attempt to portray him as the bad guy.
Do you think they succeeded?
Well, no, because he was acquitted. Ultimately, people saw through that and... Or at least the jury saw
it. The jury did. I got the impression that the public as a whole has a relatively negative.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there are plenty of people who think that he got off with, got away with murder, just like OJ. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of people that think that.
Speaking of, we don't have to. This is kind of changing the subject, but
go ahead.
If you have more to say,
no,
on
sir.
This, what about Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s journal that recently came out? Have you read those stories?
I haven't heard about that.
This is kind of interesting. There's a little bit of illicit stuff in there about his affairs and his own writings of struggling with the demons, and but there are also comments about Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Louis Farrakhan, and he says Jesse Jackson is all about Jesse Jackson. He had very low opinions of him. And Al Sharpton, he said he's done more to hurt the black cause than, who did he compare him to? George Wallace? It was kind of funny.
Nice.
So, of course, you know, all this stuff comes out, and he's, and so his response is, well, you know, I don't know how they got their hands on this, but those were stream of consciousness writings, and, you know, I really, all these guys are great guys, but his writings have some truth in them, that these people who come around in these situations, like Trayvon Martin, are so self-serving that it destroys any good that could come of the situation. And, but the media is not talking about that aspect. They're talking about the, like, the wow factor of, look at this revelation, this seedy journal that we have now of his. And they're forgetting, or they're ignoring, what they could take away from it.
Yeah. Well, I know Facebook is lit up with plenty of you know, little pictures and memes that I've seen since the Zimmerman verdict was announced about, you know, how the media was so focused on this being a hate crime because, you know, a Hispanic man who everybody was calling white attacked a black man, you know.
Yeah.
And these, you know, these Facebook images are all talking about the opposite situation in multiple cases around the country that got no media attention at all, and, you know, the fact that those were hate crimes as well. It was black on white, but it was, you know...
Well, we have two ongoing right now that are... So if you compare the extent of coverage, are being ignored.
Right.
You have the old guy, the World War II
veteran. Right, right, in Seattle.
And then you have the guy in New York. I'm sure you've heard about that guy. Forget it. His last name was Babbitt. He's in his 50s. And the white guy says, I'm going to F the next white guy. I see, decks him. Guy falls down, cracks his head on the ground. Went into a coma. He's dead now. They took him off life support. And now they're investigating whether that's a hate crime. How can you say the next white person I see, and then there's a question of whether that's a...
Yeah,
I don't...
Well, in regard to this whole, you know, thing about the, you know, reverse discrimination, right, I have nothing to say.
Okay.
All right.
I would like to say...
I don't think it really happens, and I'm just going to ignore the fact that this... I don't think this conversation even took place.
I take issue with even saying reverse discrimination because that...
I didn't say that. I didn't even bring up the subject.
Because that means that discrimination is just one... You know, that's one or not.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh. And one more. I thought you would have been on this one, Jerry.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
The Obama protesters arrested in the St. Charles...
Oh, yeah.
...on the overpass.
Yes.
To me, that was... poorly educated policeman trying to...
It was a what educated?
A poorly educated policeman.
State trooper. Those were state troopers.
Not all of them.
Yeah, I think they were
I thought
all...
it was a mix of St. Charles police and state troopers.
Well, okay, but the main guy that they start talking to that says they have to leave, yeah. He was a state trooper.
He was, okay. So I'm a poorly educated that didn't know the difference.
Well, it doesn't change the fact he may have been poorly educated himself.
Poorly educated on what? Tell us
the law and the Constitution.
Tell the listeners a little bit more. We don't know.
There were protesters on an overpass in St. Charles. They were holding up signs. I don't know what the sign said. Essentially, it was against Obama.
We don't like Obama. Okay.
Right. Police showed up and said they needed to leave. And the protesters asked them why. What were they violating? They could not tell them what law they were violating. They just said, we want you to leave.
Right.
And they kept asking, why? If you can't tell us what law we're violating, then we don't have to leave. And the police said, well, we're just asking you to leave. They said, okay, well, we understand that, and we're deciding not to.
Right.
Well, then it turned and said, now you're disobeying an officer, and you're going to be under arrest if you don't leave. And they kept asking, what are we violating? And they could not answer it, and they ultimately got arrested for not listening to an officer.
Right, obstructing justice.
And resisting arrest. Arrested for resisting arrest.
I don't know if that was an actual charge, but essentially that's what they were doing, yes. But there was they were doing nothing to get arrested in the first place.
So what exactly was it that the officer of the law was uneducated on?
He was uneducated on what authority he had to arrest them. If he couldn't tell them what they were doing wrong, what law they were violating, then he has no authority.
So this happened a couple weeks ago. Have we heard an update?
They were there the following weekend. There were more of them, and they were not arrested.
Oh, my gosh. I'm getting high just thinking of that. That sounds like chaos.
Yeah,
and anarchy.
Clearly, the city ground to a halt.
Oh.
Okay, so in honor of Leo's appearance here on the show, we're going to close things out with. I'll put the audio here from this YouTube video that you just have to watch. You have to see it to believe it. It's a group. They've got a Kickstarter project. They want to start World War III, and so they're asking for your donations to help President Obama start World War III.
And I bought my senator.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Good. I can't even describe this video. It's hilarious. You need to watch it. There's a link in the show notes.
And I triple that sentiment.
And because Obama.
Obama.
All right. So I think that's it. That's all we got. Want to thank GC Food and Brewery for hosting us once again.
Why? They didn't do anything. They don't do anything for
us. They keep the beer coming.
Whatever.
Whatever. He says as he drinks his beer.
That we pay for.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And we'd like to thank Bill and Deanna for joining us, and make sure you check them out on our YouTube channel, and we'll see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
Hi, I'm Steve.
I'm Irene.
I'm Lisa.
My name is Tom.
I'm a graphic designer.
College freshman.
Stay-at-home mom with a full-time job.
Scholar on social policy and a barista.
And I'm just like you.
I'm an Obama supporter.
I support President Obama.
But the president needs your help.
Our president can't launch into another war without you. And remember, when we voted for him in 2008 and 2012, we promised to support him no matter what.
Together, we can do it.
That's why we here at the Americans for Whatever Barack Obama Wants, Did You Know He's Friends with Jay-Z, have launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund World War III.
And America is dead-ass broke, so our goal is to raise $1.6 trillion on behalf of the U.S. government.
That's where you come in.
Even a small donation would make all the difference.